This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
Good morning. House State Affairs will come to order. I'd like to welcome everyone in the room and just remind you to turn off your cell phones or turn them to silent. Greet everyone on the internet. Thank you for listening. At this time, I'd ask the secretary to call the roll.
Representatives Anderson.
Here.
Beal.
Here.
Chafee.
Here.
Goodwin.
Here.
Gosch.
Here.
Hansen.
Here.
Jensen excused. Lesmeister.
Here.
Reimer. Reimer.
Here.
Smith.
Here.
Wiese.
Here.
Johnson.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
We have a quorum, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. We have a page. If you'd like to come up and introduce yourself, tell us where you're from and what your future plans might be. Come up right to the front here. Turn on the microphone, hit the button, and it'll turn green.
Hello, my name is Maxwell Zickrick, and I'm from Long Valley, South Dakota. I plan on going to USD to get a Bachelor's of Psychology this coming fall.
Where's Long Valley, South Dakota?
If you know where Kadoka is on the interstate, it is 30 miles south.
All right. Welcome. Thank you. We have no minutes to approve because this is our first meeting of the year. Just a reminder, we've got Justin Getz and Pam Keene as our helpers, and Grace Nelson is my intern who will be running our teams and our online stuff throughout the session. So with that, we'll be taking the bills in order today. House Bill 1025 is going to be deferred to Friday. So first up will be House Bill 1007, codify a joint committee for legislative redistricting, open for proponent testimony. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Good morning, committee. Good to be here before you. I'm Representative Fred Deutsch. I represent District 4, which is Grant, Dual, Rural Coddington, Rural Brookings. Today I bring you House Bill 1007 to codify a joint committee for redistricting. I'm sure all of you joined me during the last session and the special session with challenges in how this process unfolded. And I saw the writing on the wall right away when the committee split. And I knew right away there's going to be two maps, which is going to challenge this legislature in ways that it's rarely been challenged. So I bring forward to your committee a suggestion. You know, our prior governor, Governor Dugard, when he gave his a state of the state address, or his budget address, I should say, would always say, I'm bringing forward to you a budget, not necessarily the budget. And I'm suggesting to you that this is a tool that I would like for all of us to work on. I'd like to be able to bring this forward to the House, pass it, and move it to the Senate. I'd like for all of us, the entire legislature, to have a say in codifying the language so that the next legislature that comes forward in 10 years doesn't have to go through what we went through. So I will tell you that I asked LRC to go back and give me a history of how this process has unfolded, how redistricting has unfolded since the early days, and they were able to go back to the 1930s. And I will tell you that the process has been all over the map. It's been consistent in the last 30, 40 years until now. And so I bring this bill to you, and I'll just walk through it. It basically has six parts. The bill requires that at the next redistricting session in 2031 and every 10 years thereafter, there's going to be appointed a joint committee. Joint committee. That's the key word, I think, of the entire bill. The committee is going to consist of 15 members of the legislature. The 15 members will be split with 8 members from one chamber and 7 members from the other. In other words, 8 from the House, if you will, and 7 from the Senate. And every 10 years, that'll flip-flop. The chamber with the majority will alternate every 10 years, beginning in 2031. The House that was in the minority in 2011 will be in the majority in 2031. I selected that because this year was a mess. I mean, if I can just speak from my heart, it was a tough year. So I went back to 2011. Last, the committee will be co-chaired by one member of the House and one member of the Senate. And that's the bill. And if there are those on the committee that would like to see things changed, I'll visit with you about it as the person bringing the bill. And I don't want this to be my bill. I want it to be, I mean, this committee's bill, the legislature's bill. So with that, I'll stand by for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Deutsch. Any further proponent testimony for House Bill 1007? Further proponent testimony. Seeing none, we'd move to opponent testimony for House Bill 1007. Any opponent testimony? Seeing none, no need for rebuttal. I will move on to questions of the committee. Any questions of the committee? Seeing none, we'd move on to committee discussion and or action. Representative Gash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a voice amendment.
What is your amendment?
I would like to strike the words, starting with the word the in line 12 on the PDF format, through the period after 2031 in line 14.
So you'd like to strike the second to last sentence?
Correct, in its entirety. Yep.
In its entirety.
Second.
All right. Motion by Representative Gash. Second by Representative Beal. To strike the second-to-last sentence, line 12, beginning with the, through line 14, ending with 2031. Any questions? Everybody understand what the amendment is? All right, discussion on your motion to amend.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's just this is a particular point of language that isn't necessary. The two bodies could get together and decide this decision on the moon in a decade basis or on a decade basis. It's worked for the last 30 years. I'd say leave it alone. I like the idea of the one committee, but this is unnecessary. Thank you.
Further comments on the motion to amend? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for Mr. Speaker. So you're... Just to be clear, you're saying we're going to leave the provision on line 6 and 7 that says this is a 15-member committee, 8 members from one house, 7 from the other house. We're leaving that. We're just taking out the language about alternating years or alternating who's got the majority every 10 years.
That's correct, Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
Thank you.
Further questions on the amendment?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Lesper.
That leads me into another, thank you, Mr. Chair. That leads me into another question for him then. Which house is weighted heavier then? Which chamber? Who's 8 and who's 7?
Go ahead.
Are you asking the effect of my amendment? Is that what you're asking? The effect of my amendment would essentially leave it as is today. That decision would be made by the individual presiding officers at that time.
They would have to decide collectively which House or Senate will be in the majority. Answer your question. Any other questions on that? All right, seeing none, the motion before us is the voice amendment of Representative Gash. Everyone aware of the amendment? Do I need to reread it? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, nay. Motion carries. House Bill 1007 is so amended. Further comments, discussion, and or action? Representative Gash.
I move do pass.
Second.
Motion by Representative Gash, second by Representative Hansen. Do pass as amended House Bill 1007. Any comments on your motion?
you know, just real briefly, Mr. Chair, I think it's a great concept. I think that there were some obvious lessons learned in the last session, and I appreciate Representative Deutsch bringing them forward and trying to address them. So thank you, and I'd urge you to vote yes.
Further comments on the motion to amend, excuse me, on the motion to do pass as amended House Bill 1007? Any further comments? All right, seeing none, the motion before us do pass as amended House Bill 1007. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Representatives Anderson.
Aye.
Beal.
Aye.
Chafee.
Aye.
Goodwin.
Aye.
Gosch.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Jensen excused. Lesmeister.
Aye.
Reimer.
Aye.
Smith.
No.
Wiese.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
11 ayes, 1 nay, 1 excused.
Motion carries. House Bill 1007 will head to the House floor. All right, as I said earlier, House Bill 1025 is deferred until Friday. Next up will be House Bill 1009, Revised Certain Provisions of the Higher Education Savings Plan Act. House Bill 1009 is open for proponent testimony. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Matt Clark. I'm the State Investment Officer, and I'll just briefly describe 1009. HB 1009 updates certain provisions of the Higher Education Savings Act to be consistent with current IRS 529 code. 529 is the College Savings Plan section of code at the Internal Revenue Service at the federal level. The bill also incorporates current administrative rules into code. At the Investment Council, we're trying to get away from doing administrative rules and just have everything in the code so it can go straight through the legislature. As background, the Investment Council is statutorily responsible for administering a higher education savings plan. The South Dakota plan became operational in 2002, and the last substantive legal change was in 2003. So this bill does update those IRS reference dates. In the future, we'll probably want to update the IRS references every year. It's probably the way we ought to do it. And I understand there are some general bills that go through the legislature that update IRS references for a lot of agencies, and we'll try to tag on to that if possible in the future. But this time, there are some other minor changes as well. These other changes include updating definitions concerning account information, who beneficiaries can be, contribution limits, balance limitations, and statement requirements. What the IRS permits, we have to actually change our statutes to allow as well. And so that's what this is doing. Some examples are that the IRS now allows 529 plans to be used up to $10,000 per year for K-12 private school tuition, basically, and materials and tutoring. And so if we don't change our statutes, then even though the IRS permits it, our plan would permit it. So we need to get updated for that. It also allows 529 plans to be used for apprenticeship expenses and to repay up to $10,000 worth of student loans. The bill also reduces the permitted number of program managers. We have a manager that manages this program. That's what the council was assigned to do, was oversee it and select a manager. And we were originally permitted to have up to two managers. We've only ever had one, and we just contemplate one going forward. We're too small of a state, too small of a plan to hardly have economies of scale as it is. So we thought, let's just clean that up while we're doing the other things and get that down to one. And also, the IRS has changed how transfers can happen out of 529 plans to other kinds of plans. The major one that we wanted to update to allow was for these plans to be transferred to ABLE accounts. ABLE accounts are
achieve a better life experience type accounts for disabled people primarily. And so the idea is if you saved in a 529 plan and it turns out that you have a child that has those kind of needs, that if you didn't need to use the money for college or wanted to prioritize the other, you'd be able to transfer it over to an ABLE account. And so we needed to update our statute to have our plan permit that as well, given that the IRS now allows it. And those were my prepared comments. I can stop there and for now, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony for House Bill 1009? Any further proponent testimony for House Bill 1009? Seeing none, any opponent testimony for House Bill 1009? Any opponent testimony, House Bill 1009? Seeing none, no need for rebuttal. We go to questions of the committee. I do have one question, Mr. Clark.
Yes, sir.
With what you've proposed here, would there be any reason to put an emergency clause on to have this stuff go into effect quicker, or does that not affect what you're looking at here?
We didn't think of that, Mr. Chairman, and I don't think it's critical. It would take the program manager some time to get things, you know, changed anyway in their systems, and so I don't think there's a need for that.
Okay.
Thank you, though.
Yep. No problem. Any other questions of the committee? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony and move on to committee discussion and or action. Representative Goodwin.
I move to pass.
Motion by Representative Goodwin, second by Representative Reimer. I do pass House Bill 1009. Any comments on your motion?
None other than just Mr. Clark does a great job for us, and we're glad to have him, and he's, you know, I know he gets offers all over to go other places, and we'd like him to stay here in South Dakota because he does such a great job. And so seems common sense. I think we should go along with this.
Thank you. Further comments on the motion do pass? Seeing none, the motion before us do pass House Bill 1009. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Representatives Anderson.
Aye.
Beal.
Aye.
Chafee.
Aye.
Goodwin.
Aye.
Gosch.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Jensen excused. Lesmeister?
Aye.
Reimer?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Wiese?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
12 ayes, 1 excused.
Motion carries. House Bill 1009 will proceed to the House floor. That's fine, I don't care.
Chairman?
Yeah. I can just declare to the consent calendar. Is there any objection to moving this to the consent calendar?
I was thinking that perhaps Representative Smith would like to explain this on the House floor.
That's for me to decide.
Well, okay.
No eye contact here, anybody, right? I'll look away from the chair. Representative Anderson, would you carry this one for us on our side?
On consent.
We're not doing
that. Yeah, on consent.
Just yeah, but just in the caucus. All right, moving on now. House Bill 1002 revised certain provisions regarding the investments authorized for state public funds. Open for proponent testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Matt Clark. I'm the State Investment Officer at the State Investment Council. I'll briefly describe HB 1002. The bill would revise SDCL 4-5-26, which is the legal list of permitted investments for the cash flow fund primarily. It would allow the investment council to invest state public funds, the monies in the cash flow fund, in additional classes of investments beyond what's currently on the list. Again, the cash flow fund is the main fund affected by that. That's all the checking account monies for all the agencies, and the state reserve funds are in there. The trust funds are separate from this, and the retirement system is separate from this. The current legal list for that fund primarily includes government and agency bonds and debt, mortgage securities issued by Ginnie Mae, which is a direct federal government entity that does guarantees for mortgages, and then investment-grade U.S. corporate debt, So if it's a U.S.-based corporation and it's investment grade, it can't be a junk bond, then it's on the legal list. We can own agency debt from entities such as Fannie Mae, famous from the mortgage crisis for going bankrupt and into government receivership, although the bonds were all paid, and Freddie Mac, a similar organization to Fannie Mae. The bill would add mortgage securities issued and guaranteed by the agencies, such as Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. They are a more significant part of the market for mortgages than Ginnie Mae mortgage securities, and the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac mortgages are the main ones that are included in all the big bond indexes. So if you go to Vanguard or somewhere like that and you invest in a bond index, and there'll be mortgages in there for a quarter or a third of that index, they'll be mostly Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac type mortgages, not the Ginnie Mae, which is a much smaller part. We can already invest in direct debt of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, so we can buy their bonds, but we can't buy their mortgage-backed securities because they're technically in a trust that are created by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and they hold these mortgages, and then they're guaranteed by those agencies. The way we look at it is that we would rather own something that's collateralized by underlying mortgages rather than owning unsecured debt of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. So adding these mortgage securities of Fannie and Freddie, we think are safer than actually buying bonds of Fannie or Freddie because they are collateralized. So that would be the main thing that would be added. For the retirement system and the trust funds in our bond portfolios, when we buy mortgages, they're mostly Fannie and Freddie mortgages. But for the cash flow fund, we manage a small portion of that, $300 million. Sounds like a lot, but it's kind of small compared to the cash flow fund, is in intermediate bonds. The rest is short-term and money markets. And in that intermediate-term bond portfolio, we manage it very much like the trust fund bond portfolios and the retirement systems bond portfolios, except for when we do the mortgages, we have to go out and look for little pieces of Ginnie Mae mortgages instead of the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac mortgages we buy in the other funds. So this would allow us to manage them similarly to the other bond funds that we're managing. And then also it has implications for if we just want to invest in a bond index as well, because they're mostly going to own the Fannie and the Freddie mortgages, not the Ginnie Mae ones. The bill would also add repurchase agreements. A repurchase agreement is basically like an overnight loan to a broker, a bond broker, that they collateralize by giving you treasury bonds or agency bonds to hold as collateral overnight. And if they don't pay you back, then you get the collateral, and they have to over-collateralize them. You may be familiar with how local deposits, you know, of local governments that are deposited in banks have to be collateralized by treasuries and agency securities. And so these repurchase agreements are not currently on the legal list. We would like to add them because we contemplate investing in some index funds in the future for the cash flow fund instead of just buying all individual securities like we do now. As the world's changing that way over time, and we've got a lot of retirements coming up, and we may reallocate some staff. And so we may not actively manage all of our bond monies in the future. We may just use index funds or exchange-traded securities on index funds, like many of you may have index funds at Vanguard or exchange-traded securities on index funds. And so these index funds and money market funds, for example, will have a lot of these repurchase agreements, and we wanted to clarify that we could invest in those. I would add that local governments in South Dakota currently are authorized to invest in these repurchase agreements per SDCL 4-5-6. They're considered more conservative than investing in a corporate bond. You know, if you invest in a corporation's bond, they can go bankrupt and you can lose your money. With these repurchase agreements, if they don't pay you back, you had government, treasury, or agency bonds as collateral that you get to seize. So it's considered much safer, almost as close as you can get to treasury bills. And so the bill would add that. The final addition is to explicitly say that we can invest in exchange-traded funds and open-end, no-load mutual funds. Our contemplation is that we would invest, again, as I mentioned, in index funds or exchange-traded securities on index funds. For example, those at Vanguard would be things that we might use. We invest in some of those things now for the trust funds and the retirement system, but the cash flow fund didn't have those on the legal list. I guess back in 1972, when the legal list was created, or 71, those things didn't really exist the way that they do now. And so we would like to add that. And we've included a key word where we indicated that any of those index funds or ETFs had to be invested in underlying securities that are predominantly comprised of things on the legal list, which is, again, treasuries and agencies and these agency-guaranteed mortgages and investment-grade corporate bonds. We use the word predominantly because there are always a few oddball things in some of these index funds. There might be 1% or 2% of one of these big bond indexes that might be in debt of a corporation that might have a parent company. It might be a U.S. dollar-denominated bond issued in the United States, but guaranteed by Toyota or Nestle, which are foreign companies. Interestingly, we can buy the debt of their U.S. subsidiary because they're U.S. corporations. So we can buy Toyota Motor Credit bonds right now and do. But we can own something issued directly by Toyota, even if the parent company in Japan, even if it's set up in the U.S. and in U.S. dollars. And we may not necessarily want to invest in those, but these index funds do invest a little bit of the money in some of this stuff. Or some of these U.S. corporations, a dozen years or so ago, they were heading to Bermuda to change their incorporation there for tax reasons. And there's still a handful of them still there. And they changed the tax rules, so that kind of stopped, but they were still some there. And if they would issue a bond, even though they might have their headquarters in Chicago and be a U.S. corporation for all practical purposes, they might have their technical headquarters domicile in Bermuda. And the indexes would look through that and say, well, it's basically a U.S. company. And they would include them, but our legal list wouldn't. And so we wanted the word predominantly so that if there's a couple oddball things in these indexes, it wouldn't knock us out. Because otherwise, we would have to only invest in an index where 100% of the things in the index were on our legal list. And that's just not going to happen because our legal list doesn't have, you know, enough of the categories. And it seems simpler just to use the word predominantly. If there were any suggestions on a different word that you gave you more comfortable limiting it to, you know, under 5% or something like that. But we wanted some wiggle room because, well, what if it was 4% and then it went to 6? And then would we have to sell all these index funds? And would we not have people to buy individual bonds anymore because our people that do those bonds are all retiring now? And so our plan is to kind of index a lot of that stuff and have our high yield people spend their time deciding which indexes to move in and out of instead of having investment grade bond portfolio managers in the future after the current ones retire. And so perhaps with that enough on the legal list part, Mr. Chairman, the one final part of the bill, and it clarifies that the School and Public Lands Fund is excluded from this legal list, just like the other trust funds are, and the retirement system for other reasons is as well. There was a constitutional amendment in 2000 which passed, which allowed the School and Public Lands Fund to invest in stocks, bonds, and other financial instruments like the retirement system does. Before that, it had to invest only in U.S. Treasuries and agency securities. And of course, it was pilfered by inflation for, you know, many, many decades. And so it only had $132 million now, and, you know, it's well over doubled that now because of that change. But when that change happened, it was viewed that the constitutional amendment overpowered, you know, these statutes, and but still it was left in doubt. Well, why is it in a statute? Why is it not specifically exempt in the statute, even though there was a subsequent constitutional amendment, you know, that overruled that? And so just to clarify that, the School and Public Lands Commissioner, who sits on the Investment Council Board, asked us if we would stick that clarification in here just to make that explicit, so there was no confusion in the future. And with that, perhaps I'll pause, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Further proponent testimony for House Bill 1002. Any further proponent testimony? Perfect timing, sir. You just walked in the door.
I haven't signed in yet, so I'll do it.
All right.
Ryan Bruner, Commissioner in School and Public Lands. Matt already touched on all of it, but would appreciate your support. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, sir. Further proponent testimony, House Bill 1002. Representative Drury, would you like to come up and say a few words? Seeing none, any opponent testimony for House Bill 1002? Any opponent testimony? Seeing none, any questions? No need for rebuttal. Any questions of the committee? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For Mr. Clark, first of all, thanks, Mr. Clark, for all your work on behalf of the state. Really respect everything that you do, so thank you. I just have a question about these mortgage-backed securities and ask for you to comment on them. You know, if somebody would have come in like 12 or 15 years ago and said, hey, I got a plan, we're going to buy a bunch of mortgage-backed securities, they probably would have said you're crazy. So maybe you can just comment on sort of like the stability of these investments today versus when the subprime mortgage crisis was going on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, well, thank you for the question, and thank you for the nice comment, too. I appreciate that. And in the mortgage crisis, the mortgage bonds that got in trouble were all these subprime, and they were called Alt-A as well, alternative, you know, mortgages. Interestingly, we bought a lot of those at 50 cents on the dollar in the financial crisis. And some of those people kept paying the whole way through, even though they bought their house at the top and it fell half. They kept on paying, and they're still paying their mortgage. And those bonds sell over par now, most of them. But these would be different than that, in that these would be guaranteed by Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac or Ginnie Mae, you know, which is the direct federal agency, or FHA, or even the, I think the Ag Department has some programs, right, for rural housing mortgages and things like that. And so we could buy Farmer Mac bonds as well. And so the mortgage bonds that this bill would allow the cash flow fund to buy weren't those kinds that got in trouble. The kinds that got in trouble were not guaranteed. And so they were non-qualifying. No one guaranteed them. And if the people didn't pay, all you could do was have your loan servicer repo the house and sell it off, and you'd get what you get on the distributions, which might be 50 cents on the dollar. You know, they were trading at 50 cents on the dollar because a lot of those loans, that's all you got if you had to repossess the house and sell it at the bottom. And so these would be guaranteed. Now, the question in our minds was always, well, how good's the guarantee? And how good is Fannie and Freddie? And, you know, wouldn't you rather the U.S. Treasury guaranteed it? And Ginnie Mae is more of a direct obligation. But the reality is the government backed those entities, and they wiped out the shareholders, but the bondholders were held harmless. and the government always had an implicit guarantee, and they had always acknowledged that it would be financial Armageddon on the system, because, you know, banks are loaded with all these agency debt, and it would wipe out, you know, the entire financial system if they allowed Fannie and Freddie to default on their debt, and they didn't in the financial crisis. And in hindsight, I don't think it was even close to that point. And the mortgages that were guaranteed by those entities also, you know, were viewed as safe in that environment. That's not to say the spreads didn't widen a little bit, because people went from being 100% sure that they were effectively the same as guaranteed by the U.S. government. Maybe it eroded to 99.9 in their minds, and the spreads widened out a little bit, but it didn't fall to 50-50 or anything like that. And if the Depression happened, I still think these things would be guaranteed, you know, by the federal government. Now, the question is, well, what's their guarantee worth? Well, they can print all the money they want, right? Then the real question is, they'll pay you in dollars. You just won't be able to buy anything with them. And I think that's what will happen. But that risk isn't any different than if we just invested in U.S. Treasuries. I hope that helps with the question.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Any further, Representative Goodwin?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, this is for Mr. Clark also. I guess it has to be the only testifier. If I remember right on that Freddie Mae and Fannie Mac, they were thought of being too big to fail, and so the federal government bailed them out, and nobody lost any money because of the, except for the taxpayers, because the federal government went further in debt to bail them out. So I think that's an important note. But what do you think the chances are that this could happen again?
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
The housing loan standards had been pretty tight, but it seems real recently they've been getting loose again. And the last year or so, we've seen housing prices spike like crazy. And so I'm getting worried that, you know, we're getting a little bit of a bubble in housing again. I'm more worried that there are broader bubbles from all this money printing and the super low interest rates. And so in my view, we definitely have a bond market bubble. You know, interest rates are way too low, bond prices way too high because of that, and there's a lot of risk. And either they keep printing money to prop that up, which leads to inflation, which we're already starting to see, or the interest rates have to go up, or a combination of the two, which, you know, they won't have the guts to do what they need to do, so it'll be a combination of the two. They'll lean in the right direction a little bit, but not enough, because it'll be too painful, and they'll give lip service to inflation, but they won't do enough, so we'll get some of each. And so I'm very concerned about the financial markets in general. You know, I think corporate debt has a lot of leverage in it, and you know, these mortgage-backed securities, I think, are a lot less risky than the corporate debt, which most of the cash flow fund is invested in, and so we're trying to be more conservative there. You know, with the trust funds, the retirement system, we have our minimum of our ranges that we have for equity-like risk, stock market-type risk. You know, we have a third cash, you know, in the retirement system, which is unprecedented. I don't know of any other retirement system that probably has more than 5%, and we're a third. The trust funds, you know, similar. And so, you know, we're very conservative now because of elevated market valuations. And, you know, you never know what the catalyst is going to be, but when you're so expensive, you're vulnerable to the least little problem coming along to be the pin that pops the bubble. And when that happens, you know, we'll find out what all the problems are. But I think we'll see a lot of problems in leveraged corporations from all these takeovers that are heavily debt financed, a lot of real estate, commercial real estate, things like that, I think have been heavily leveraged. So we're very conservative. We also think interest rates are too low, and so, you know, we try to keep our maturity of our bond portfolio shorter as well. And so, on the other hand, you know, if you just invested it all in treasuries, which have the least credit risk, you know, you get a lower return, but you still have the biggest risk of all, which is the fact that the dollars aren't going to be worth much, you know, because the inflation is going to erode them. And so we're balancing that. You know, we're between a rock and a hard place, and it's not going to end well. The only avenue that we can make any money on any of these funds, especially those like the trust funds and retirement system that can take some risk, is if we do get the crashes, then we can load up. We can spend that cash. We can buy assets cheap, ride it back up, and then sell it again and do it over and over again. And that's the only way, in our view, we're going to make any money, because, you know, it's a bubble. Everything's expensive. You don't earn enough on your money, period. Just even, you know, treasuries, you know, pay way too low. And anything with more risk than that, you know, pays a premium for the risk, but not enough. And so across the board, we're very negative. I hope that helps.
Further questions? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Clark, for all you do. Move on to committee discussion and or action. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move do pass.
Motion by Representative Johnson, second by Representative Hansen. Do pass House Bill 1002. Any comments on your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was blessed with being invited to an academy focusing on pension funds about a month and a half ago, and there were well over a dozen states represented there at that academy, and became pretty clear from the onset that the South Dakota is really viewed by the entire country as a shining star on the hill when it comes to our investment funds, and our, especially our pension fund. It's no secret, you know, we have the best pension fund in the country, and this bill is just one more indicator that our great investment council is constantly in pursuit of the highest and best use of our state public funds in order to make sure that we are safe from risk. Now, there's no risk. There's risk in any investment. Nothing comes without risk. But I'm very confident that under the direction of Mr. Clark, that our investment council has always got their eye on that ball. And I appreciate everything that they do. I know it's been stated many times before, but I thank you for everything that you do. And this is just one more indicator that we're as safe can be in this country. So I heartily endorse it, and I hope that everyone on this committee passes or votes to pass it.
Thank you. Further comments on the do pass motion? Seeing none, the motion before us is do pass House Bill 1002. All those in favor say aye, all those opposed nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Representatives Anderson.
Aye.
Beal.
Aye.
Chafee.
Aye.
Goodwin.
Aye.
Gosch.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Jensen, excuse. Lesmeister.
Aye.
Reimer.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
Wheezy.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
12 ayes, 1 excuse.
Excuse me, would like to certify on consent. Any objection to that? All right. Representative Anderson, you want to just carry both of these in the caucus for us? Thank you. With that, we have come to the end of our agenda for the day. Would I entertain a motion to adjourn?
Move we adjourn.
Motion by Beal, second by Hansen. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed nay. We are adjourned.